Welcome to the Penny and Pops podcast. He's Spencer Penny Strode. I'm Adam Pops Pop Giorgio. The NBA Eastern Conference playoff fifth seed and new Southeast Division champions, your Orlando Magic. Just happy we figured it out. You know, it came down to the last day. It got a little tumultuous there during the week, but we figured it out. We're in the playoffs. Let's go.
Hardaway straight down the lane. The power jam. Point guard on the 7-6 stack. Here's Lewis turning and he shoots. Yes! With four and 1 second.
Here's Turkaloo for the win.
We are recording this Sunday night, April 14th. The NBA regular season is officially over. The Orlando Magic, they finished with a record of 47-35, which is two games better than even my optimistic prediction. So that's awesome. We are the fifth seed in the East. We will be facing the fourth seed, Cleveland Cavaliers, in our first postseason since the 2020 bubble. So we'll be heading up to Cleveland for games one and two. We know at this moment that we're going to be playing the first game Saturday, April 20th, but we don't know time and network. We won the Southeast Division title, our seventh division crown in franchise history, our first since 2019. It was a very rocky week, Penny, but we made it. You know, we've gone from 22-34 to now 47 wins. How are we feeling, Penny, after this?
Pretty amazing day. Based on the last week, and hard not to feel very proud about the organization and the way things have gone and that linear progression that you mentioned over the last three seasons.
Yeah, look, we got to go through some of the bad stuff of the week, you know, because we went into the final four games. And look, I said it, right, where it's like, hey, we could go 1-3. We could go 0-4. That's possible. That's on the table. Ideally, you wanted to go 2-2. That didn't happen. We went 1-3, but this wasn't going to be a gimme, right, Penny? Like, this isn't like some ridiculous collapse. Like, we had a three-game road trip that we knew wasn't going to be easy, and then one home game to that ended up determining everything.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, we're playing teams outside of Houston that had everything to play for as well. So there were no gimmies at all. And Houston really was, you know, out of the playoff picture, but they were playing for 41 wins and not to have a losing season. So every game was tough and the results were tough too.
Oh, I didn't even factor that in. Yeah. I mean, look, going to that Houston game on Tuesday, you knew East teams were going to try to do two things. Like, they were going to try and avoid Boston's side of the bracket. And then the other thing was they were going to try and avoid facing Joel Embiid in round one. So, you know, finishing second, third, sixth, or seventh kept you away from a potential Boston Celtics, matchup until the Eastern Conference Finals. Because you had all this 2-8, you know, seed jockeying that was occurring, and everybody was fully aware of kind of who they want to play and who they want to avoid if possible. Because the Magic, we could have finished second. You know, we could have finished second. We could have finished third. We could have finished fourth. But we also could have fallen all the way down to eighth. So, you know, we're not going to host home court, but we don't have to worry about playing a play-in game. So that's pretty great to not have to worry about. You know, because I know we had these three straight road losses that we're going to talk about now, but it's part of the growth process when you got such a young team. We didn't talk about it last pod, but I thought about it, and I think maybe we talked about it off the show, but obviously I didn't want us to have to lose three straight games, but I thought, you know, is it actually potentially helpful that we don't end up having home court for this round one? Because there's a decent argument from a game one and game two playoff jitters perspective and like overhype and overexcitement perspective that maybe it's just better to get game one and two out of the way as a road team so that you know, if you win a game, awesome. If you don't, that's okay, because now you got your two home games. But obviously, with how the week's kind of unfurled, where we kind of had three playoff games right here now, you know, as far as, you know, I won't count Houston from an intensity perspective, but definitely at Milwaukee Wednesday, at Philly on Friday, and today against the Bucks. I mean, we're talking playing playoff intensity, right, Penny?
Oh, yeah, I mean, definitely. I don't know that it ratchets up all the way to what they're going to experience this next weekend in Cleveland, but certainly an appetizer to the main course for sure, and getting used to, I think, not only that intensity, but also, as we talked about a lot, you know, the physicality ratcheting up, and the refs not bailing any of it out either.
Unless you're Joel Embiid or like Dame Lillard. But look, we're not going to talk about the Cavs series now, but going to Cleveland isn't as daunting as going to New York, Boston, or Philly. And then also the Cavs are, they're mighty close to like collapsing right before our eyes. Like, their fans have been freaking out for a month, and it's very possible Donovan Mitchell gets traded away and they're going to blow the whole thing up. And yeah, I mean, Cleveland's kind of been a miserable situation. So there's going to be an opportunity there for us. You know, we're not going to talk about that now, but that's on the table. All right, Penny, which of the three road losses out of Houston, Milwaukee, or Philly was our worst defeat in your eyes? What do you think?
Well, worst defeat or most frustrating? I think the Houston one's the most frustrating and ended up being the worst, because it kind of, I'm going to pick that one because it kind of set in motion the no good, terrible, awful week that we had that was salvaged on Sunday afternoon. But the complexity of the whole week changes if the Magic are able to get that win, especially with, you know, Miami kind of helping us out earlier in the week.
Yeah, I think most Magic fans would say that, and that's probably the correct answer. I'm going to say Milwaukee, though, on Wednesday, because they didn't have Yanni, they didn't have Chris Middleton. Yeah, it's the second night of a back-to-back, but it was also second night of a back-to-back for them. I know we had to fly up there, and they got to stay put in Milwaukee to await us. But, you know, obviously we made up for that game today, and even Chris Middleton actually played today. But we got lucky not to be in the play-in, because we needed some help to avoid the play-in a little bit. Whereas I think you're right. If we win that Houston game, that Dallas-Miami game happens, where Dallas probably wins in Miami anyway, and you would have clinched before the Philly game, right? We would have clinched. Yep. So that you avoid a lot of pain in that instance. And yeah, you could have had home court, but it's okay. You know, it's all part of the ride here when you got a young team that just has not been in the situation before. All right, let's talk about that Houston game. So the Rockets, you know, were eliminated from postseason play, as you'd mentioned. I was hoping that they'd be deflated going into this game. They haven't had an Alperen Şengün for a while, and they were still playing pretty well for a bit there. But, you know, the other thing with them was their draft pick, which is top four protected, is most likely going to go to OKC. So they weren't going to rest anyone anyway. We wrecked the Rockets in our building on opening night, which feels like ages ago. But, you know, that was a 30-point opening night win for us that really set the tone for the season that we had. And just, it was all added motivation for Houston, I think, to get us back. That plus it was their fan appreciation night. And as we've seen, us included today, Sunday, you know, don't never underestimate the power of a home of a fan appreciation night. But yeah, I mean, for us, Franz Wagner, Jonathan Isaac were both questionable going into that game. Caleb Houston was back healthy. The Magic, we could have clinched the Southeast Division title with a win and a Heat loss in Atlanta. That didn't happen, obviously. Orlando could have clinched a top six playoff spot with the win, and losses to, you know, Miami, Indiana, or Philly. That didn't happen either. So, you know, Franz, he ended up sitting this game with the ankle sprain. Jonathan Isaac did play. Markelle Fultz did start for us, so that meant Gary Harris actually slid over to small forward. And we went up early 10-5, and then our offense just got sloppy, and Houston just pounced on us. Like, the Rockets were continuously raining threes on us the whole night. Houston wasn't playing a center, so you wanted to see us take advantage of that down low. Wendell didn't do that. Mo Wagner did. You know, the Magic were down 63-51 at halftime. Houston's got awesome athletes. I mean, Amen Thompson is going to be really good, and he's going to be freaking good if he develops a jump shot. But I mean, the Rockets, they have these athletes that are giving us problems. Like Jalen Green had that absurd putback dunk off what was a great athletic defensive play by Jalen Suggs, and Green's coming out of flying in out of nowhere with a putback jam. That was a nasty highlight. Look, I've been nitpicking and I've been mentioning it, you know, starting Goga and Anthony Black, or at least throwing them in here and there. And I thought that's what should have been done to start the third quarter, where you would have had Wendell and Markelle Fultz sitting. Mosley didn't do that. Suggs, Paolo, Fultz, and Mo Wagner were kind of keeping us in this game. We were down 90-78 when Joe Ingles got into it with Cam Whitmore. He just really just fucked Cam Whitmore's head mentally. And it was so bad that Cam got ejected because he threw an elbow into the back of Joe Ingles. So I thought we'd get some momentum out of that. We didn't, because we were trailing 97-82 entering the fourth quarter. I mean, up to this point, Penny, what do you think of this game? Because I think even at halftime, I wasn't feeling good about this game, even though we've had pretty decent comeback wins against teams under 500 when we're down double digits. I just did not feel good about this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem was how it was occurring with the 3-point shooting, and then also Fred VanVleet was just, you know, as he does or seems to do against the Magic almost every time. The other thing that was frustrating about this game was the way Houston was scoring, and then the Magic kept trying to go to that zone defense to then give them even better looks from beyond the arc, makes it a lot harder to mount a double-digit comeback on.
Yeah, I mean, Udoka coached a pretty good game. Can't deny them that. I mean, again, we were down 15 to start the fourth, and then we had a 9-0 run off of that ended basically off of Markelle Fultz block on Jabari Smith Jr. And then Ingles hitting that corner three. So we're only down 97-91. At that point, you're like, okay, this might be something here. But then, you know, because Markelle Fultz was actually doing a pretty good job of carrying us at various points in this game. And, you know, the fourth quarter kind of dragged along a bit where we were hanging around down 6 and 8 points. But then the Rockets just kept hitting threes. We started doubling Fred VanVleet, and we got torched. And I mean, I'm just that's one of those where why not try Anthony Black on Fred VanVleet instead of double teaming him? And because I mean, Houston was just making threes because we were giving them to him. And you know, the Rockets won because Fred VanVleet got a season high against us. And you know, they played hard. We didn't do that consistently enough, and it showed. It's disappointing loss. And you know, the other thing, the double whammy, was every other NBA result went against the Magic, like the Bucks, Knicks, Pacers, Sixers, and Heat. Even though it took the Heat double overtime in Atlanta, they all won. So at that point, the Knicks had moved up to third. The Magic fell to fourth. Any other Rockets thoughts before we go to the next game, Milwaukee on Wednesday?
It was kind of in the same vein as some of the ones that we've had recently, like the Clippers game and a couple others where it's like you're right there, but there's a couple plays where you could get over the hump and then you don't, and then it just never happens. So a frustrating result based on, you know, we had a really great day, but, you know, last game and all of the results basically in the NBA went in our favor, and then a little deflating there, and then you have to get right on the plane and go up to Milwaukee.
All right. Bucks game Wednesday. On paper, looking at it from the stuff from, I mean, back in October, I looked at it as on paper, and you would have figured this was a schedule loss for the Magic. And all season long, we've been pretty bad on the second night of back-to-back. So that's the good thing about the playoffs. You don't get back-to-backs in the playoffs. So, you know, this, I already mentioned, this was also back-to-back from Milwaukee, but they were staying home. Like, we probably didn't get into the hotel till like 3 a.m., but I don't think that was a good enough excuse for this game, because the Bucks, they haven't fully figured it out yet. You know, they play well when they have their core four together, where it's Giannis Antetokounmpo, Brooke Lopez, Damian Lillard, and Chris Middleton. Like, when those four guys all play, like, they play pretty well. And I mean, like, the only teams I could think of that probably played better than Boston is Milwaukee's Boston and Denver, basically, when you have Milwaukee's four all together like that. But if one guy sits, like, they struggle against even bad teams. And it's just been really bizarre, whether it was Adrian Griffin coaching them or, you know, Doc Rivers now. And I am not a Doc Rivers hater like a lot of people on social media are, but he's been saying some weird stuff in press conferences to try and deflect the losing. And then Yanni went down on his own with a left calf strain in the third period of their Tuesday game against Boston, and he's out to the playoffs. It's going to be interesting to see if he's playing game one for them, but we don't have to worry about that right now on our end from a Magic perspective. But, you know, again, don't underestimate the power of a home season finale. You know, it was the Bucks fan appreciation night, and Bobby Portis played his freaking mind off. You know, the Magic would have won the division had we beat the Bucks and Miami lost in Dallas. Miami lost to Dallas, but, you know, in Miami, but obviously we didn't cover our end, so we didn't win the division that night. The Magic would have clinched the top six seed with a win and losses to both Miami and the Cavs, and that didn't happen because Cleveland beat Memphis, although the Grizzlies actually gave the Cavs a bit of a scare there. Caleb Houston, Jonathan Isaac were off the injury report entirely, so they were playing. Gary Harris was out due to right foot maintenance. Franz with his right ankle sprain and Markelle Fultz, left knee maintenance, were questionable going into the game. And it ended up Markelle Fultz did play and Franz Wagner didn't play. Be honest, Penny, were you surprised Franz didn't play in this game? Because I actually was. I thought Franz was playing for sure.
Yeah, you had. I was not. I figured they'd be extra cautious, but you, I think you were right in that we both kind of assessed the ankle roll as a minor thing. You thought they might even give him a go in Houston.
And yeah.
If we needed him, I think probably he would have played, but especially with no Yanni and no Chris Middleton, I think you try to roll the dice there and give him a couple more days of rest.
Yeah, Middleton was out with left ankle maintenance. So, I mean, we still should have won that game, I thought. But because, yeah, I mean, that's just one of those where when you basically just have Lillard and Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis as kind of the main guys, like you should win that game, I feel like. But we didn't. And, I mean, that's where their experience just kicked our ass. The Magic, they started Wendell, Paolo, Caleb Houston, Jalen Suggs, Markelle Fultz. Again, Portis just he usually comes off the bench, so this was a rare start for him. And then, of course, Patrick Beverley had recently started games for them, and so he started this game, as he would also start Sunday. Jalen Suggs, he was playing with a heavily bandaged left hand and wrist, which I thought impacted his shot. And he still has it now. It's going to be interesting if he still is having it all bandaged up like that for game one in Cleveland in the playoffs. But there's some concerns with that because his scoring has definitely gone down with all these falls and hits he's taken. And, you know, the defense is still there. You know, the effort's still there, but he's worn down and Suggs definitely needs this week off. That's for damn certain. Out of anyone else on the team, like Suggs needs this week off. So, but yeah, I mean, it didn't look great from the start. Lillard, Brooke Lopez were hitting some long threes, which spread out our defense, and the Magic were down 23-15 out of the gate. Anthony Black got some very rare first quarter minutes in this game. The Magic bench eventually kind of settled into this game. And then we had that weird stretch where we basically had four straight turnovers late in the first quarter, but yet the Magic were only down 23-27 after one quarter. So, you know, I didn't feel too bad at that point, but 3 minutes into the second period, Bobby Portis is already up to 20 points for this game. And then the Magic were down 40-51 as Jalen Suggs got a technical foul and was rightfully pissed off because he got fouled on what should have been a 4-point play on a three that he made. But, you know, I thought Mosley should have eaten a technical right then and there, especially instead of Suggs getting it. But, you know, that's just not his style at the moment. Paolo, especially, but other guys as well on our team, they looked gassed. And, I mean, look, second night of a back-to-back. But even still, like, we just looked noticeably gassed than usual. And I thought Mosley should have gone with fresher legs, like, you know, Goga, Trevlin Queen, you know, in there because he did it with Anthony Black, but he didn't quite do it at that point. The Magic were down 64-50 at halftime. I was not feeling good about this game. Penny, I'm assuming you weren't feeling good about this game being down 14 at the break.
No, and I mean, it's just hard to watch Bobby Portis kick your ass because he's doing it with the unhinged, crazy Graves disease eyes too while yeah. He's doing it.
I had it as a note. I took it out, but I don't mention it now. But like him versus Mo Wagner is like two crackheads fighting over a rock. Like those two guys were just like jawing and like gesticulating at each other and just like doing like crazy shit at each other. But it's tough to match Bobby's crazy eyes. It's really tough. So Wendell, who was getting bullied in the paint, he only had one rebound at halftime, which was not good enough. And then Caleb Houston just were not good enough. They were not good starters in this game. And I thought they should have been taken. They shouldn't have started the third, but there's now this Paolo, there's definitely this Paolo Banchero discourse for Magic fans occurring on social media, which is very annoying to see from them in regards to our 21-year-old stud. Like, part of growing up in this league is building your body up to handle this type of intensity for 82-plus games. And again, he's 21. He's in his second season. Struggles like this late in a campaign are normal in physical and mental growth and the strengthening process, because this really doesn't have anything, even anything to do with talent or mentality. Like, it's, he's a stud, but you just got to do this a couple times before you're actually used to it. And it's even different from last year when we were kind of flirting with the play-in. Like, this is like a complete different level. And, you know, this is why young stars, they very rarely make deep playoff runs at this age, because of just the grind of this type of these types of campaigns and seasons. And I just need Magic fans to be smarter about this and just give the kid a break. Like, he's going to figure out, he's going to be fine. He had a damn good game today on Sunday when we needed it. So Mosley didn't have any lineup changes to start the third period. The Magic were down 59-77 midway through the third. It just wasn't good enough. And Paolo, who did get it going, like, he needed help. Damian Lillard was cooking us. Cole Anthony kind of kept us around, but we were down 77-96 entering the fourth. It was game over from there. Like, the only good news that came out of Wednesday night was that was Dallas winning in Miami. Like, that was huge for us. But Magic fans could kiss home court goodbye basically at that point. And it was about avoiding the play-in. Thoughts on this Bucks game or any of the other stuff I said?
Yeah, I mean, you covered all of the key aspects of the game itself, but the takeaway that I found the most interesting was that, you know, a rarity this season where both Fultz and Isaac played on the second night of a back-to-back. And I thought that was, you know, spoke to the importance that in some ways that, you know, Mosley and the staff and up above put on trying to cinch something that night, but also, I think also set the stage for what we saw a lot of in terms of some adjustments that were made in the Sunday game, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Yeah, I mean, and that left us with two games left. You know, had the Magic lost the last two games, we would have probably been talking about the eighth seed and playing our first ever play-in game on the road against the seventh seed, most likely Miami Heat at that point. But had the Magic won in Philly on Friday, we would have locked up the division in the top six seed. So everybody knew kind of the stakes at hand there. I mean, Philly's been rolling when Embiid plays, and even when he's not playing, then Tyrese Maxey's dropping 52 points in San Antonio in double overtime games. Like, the Sixers got something kind of going there a little bit. And it was weird because I was more worried about like Mo Bamba or like Tobias Harris or even Jeff Towton Jr., who had recently signed, like giving us some revenge games, but that didn't factor in at the, really in this at all. And then there's Nick Nurse's kind of whining ass who just, him and the, you know, his Raptors back in 2019, they knocked us out of the playoffs. Nick Nurse still annoys me when I watch him coach as a Sixer. So I'm just glad we're not going up against him in a playoff series right now. But yeah, you know, between all that and then the Allen Iverson statue reveal day, and then having to worry about an Ed Malloy officiating crew, like, the Magic were going to have to just definitively earn this game, which they did not, unfortunately. And you know, Franz Wagner, Gary Harris were back. So the Magic started Wendell, Paolo, Franz, Gary, and Suggs. Wendell wrenched his back early on and was basically done. Goga, it was Goga time. But, of course, he looked rusty, so I looked bad for that. But I just think if he gets a bit more consistent playing time, he would have fared a little bit better in this game. It just didn't really work out for him. Suggs, he's, again, I hope he just soaks in a tub of like ice water for like 4 days, but he was holding on to his back and hip a lot in this game. And the Sixers, tell me if you heard this before, but they torched us with threes in this game. We were down 40-27 after one quarter. It's never good to give up 40 points in a first quarter or any quarter. We then got some Isaac at center minutes against MB to close the half. And then Embiid on his own hyperextended his left knee, it looked like, late in the half, went to the locker room. The Magic were only down 56-61 at that instant. And then Suggs picked up this weird late technical foul where it looked like he spit on accident on Evan Scott, the referee. And that's how he got the T. The Magic, they were down 68-61 at halftime. I felt good because I thought Embiid was done for the game. Didn't quite work out like that, right, Penny? Like, it's, you're down seven, but if they didn't have Embiid, like, you felt like it was definitely possible this game.
Yeah, we were feeling good at halftime. I think we would have felt great at halftime if they had ended the half a little bit cleaner and kept that deficit at, you know, three or five and not seven. Of course, then you see Embiid warming up and ready to check in for the third, and you get a little deflated again.
So Joel Embiid ends up starting the third quarter. I'm thinking, like, this guy's limping around, and like he's your only hope. Like, do you really want to play him in this game? But they did, and it paid off because we just could not handle it. You know, we did way too much switching though and swarming in that third, and that from the opener of that third period. Like, I thought we should have at least tested Embiid to see if he could back dudes down one on one, and we never really let that happen. And even now, I don't think Embiid's had like a dunk in like weeks. It's very interesting. So we just didn't test him one-on-one. And Evan Scott, I thought, bailed out Embiid constantly in this game. Like, Joel couldn't even get within like 10 feet of the rim without help from the officials. And, you know, it was frustrating to watch that. I thought Gary Harris was noticeably bad in this game. The Magic were down 13 points entering the fourth quarter. The Magic did cut into the deficit again. They were down seven with 8:46 left while Embiid was sitting. Nick Nurse sat Joel as long as possible. I mean, it was probably like a good 7-8 minutes, it felt like. But then Embiid came back with 6:01 left in the game. And the Magic were down 102-111. And we put Jonathan Isaac on Embiid again. And then Maxey just took over. Like, he was just too good down the stretch. Like, we then had that bad challenge overturn where the refs were, they clearly neglected Tobias Harris's arm doing this underhook move on Paolo before Banchero elbowed him as Paolo's going up for a bucket. The Sixers won that challenge, which was bullshit. And and then the Magic just kind of ran out of time from there. We were down 10 with 2:30 left. We had to hope that Cleveland held on against the Pacers to give us one final out at earning a top six spot, and thank God it happened. So, you know, the Pacers, they lost to the Cavs, and we got our lifeline for a top six spot going into Sunday. Any thoughts on this Bucks game, Penny, or on the Sixer game?
Yeah, small sample size theater, but you know, you and I were both up there for the back to back games in Philly last year, and Gary Harris really kind of had off nights in both of those games too, and you know, had another stinker that certainly didn't help on Friday night. The biggest thing, and we talked about this as we were watching the game, was kind of the questionable doubling on Embiid. Obviously, he was hitting threes Friday night.
A lot of threes, yeah.
There was a lot of situations where it felt like you were needlessly putting your defense at a disadvantage. And, you know, when the Sixers have Maxey on the floor too, it just didn't seem like the smartest thing to do.
And then Sunday, this afternoon, our own fan appreciation day. Like, the Magic, they had to win or else we were in the play-in. But 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th seeds were all Magic possibilities. It seemed most likely going in that if Orlando beat Milwaukee, that the Bucks were going to be who we would face in the playoffs as in a 4-5 matchup. But today I viewed it as kind of one of those, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger type of games, which we don't get a lot of those, but it, you know, every single NBA team has just a roller coaster of an 82 game experience. Like, it just, everybody goes through it. Even the teams at the very top have it. And, you know, we had it in the winter with the toughest part of our schedule, especially that January. Like, we got it again here at the end, trying to balance kind of this playoff anticipation while yet learning how to close out a season. And it's just new territory for us. But if the Magic won, not only do you survive? But you get rewarded with a top six seed and a week off to rest and prep for the first round. And you'd go into that playoff series kind of already knowing a little bit what NBA playoff intensity is about from just this rocky week that we experienced. I know it's not the exact same thing, but pretty close. But I thought this was a big test for the Kia Center crowd as well. Kind of what type of urgency and energy would the fans bring? And I don't know, Penny, they passed. I thought they passed. Like, it seemed pretty great listening through my TV.
Yeah. You know, we always compare buildings, but I think this year is probably the first year where you can sense the energy in the building, probably more so than you have in the decade plus that it's been open.
Yep. The Magic, they gave all fans that attended, it looks like, bucket hats at the door. So I think Advent Health sponsored them. They look pretty nice. And then they gave season ticket holders a vinyl record of two songs, both the new and old school versions of the Orlando Magic theme song. And I am jealous as hell, man, because I had this exact idea and I definitely hope I can buy one of these because these look really cool and I would love one of them. And honestly, had the Magic not done one of these, I might have custom made one, and I still might have to custom make one if I can't buy one of these. But I don't know. What'd you think of the record?
Yeah, very cool. I was on board with your idea. I just wasn't sure how the licensing
would work. No, this would have been like a bootleg thing. Yeah. I'm being completely honest on that. But there's no way I could have gotten the rights to it.
You have a great chance, I think, at there's a season ticket holder out there that will sell you on at a markup, I'm sure.
I'm searching like eBay and so the socials and Facebook Marketplace and shit like that. I haven't seen it yet, but it's early. Maybe a couple will make it their way online. But everyone was healthy for the Magic. And yet Wendell Carter Jr. came off the bench as we got the surprise that Jonathan Isaac was starting at the five, which obviously in hindsight, we could say it was a good move. But even going in, it seemed to be like a good move. And maybe one that's going to be permanent moving forward. But that Isaac, Paolo, Franz, Gary Harris, Jalen Suggs starting five, it's the first time we've ever seen the starting lineup. I think they'd only played like 25 minutes together this season. So not much of a sample size at all. Even though the defensive rating and the net ratings are great, it's still not a big, it's not a big sample size. But the Bucks were going for it despite, Giannis Antetokounmpo being out hurt. They started Lillard, Beverly, Middleton, Portis, and Lopez. So that was a strong five for Doc. Looking around the league, the Cavs, they sat Donovan Mitchell and other guys against Charlotte, which we'll talk about a bit, but it ended up being like a huge tanking move for them. The Cavs wanted to lose that game against Charlotte. And then Philly sat Embiid D'Anthony Melton, and against Brooklyn, they ended up not needing them. They beat the Nets pretty comfortably, but I don't know. You want to let me know if I'm wrong, but this Jeff Turner said, and I agree, like this was arguably the Magic's most important game number 82 in a regular season since 1993. And it's tough to disagree. I don't know if you could think of anything different.
I mean, this one and the final game of the Heart and Hustle season in terms of like last game of the year, I think right up there. But 93 was actually, and also basically the first taste of it for the franchise. So hard to compare.
Yeah, I think with the Heart and Hustle team, though, I think the last game ended up not mattering, I think, because we lost the game before or somebody else clinched the game before, but I don't know. You might be right. I didn't look into it, but anyway, so they had Magic fans in the building sing the national anthem, which that's always a sneaky way of building up fan energy. So that seemed to work out pretty well. Bobby Portis again got Milwaukee off to a great start. Shocker, right? But the Bucks were also then giving us a lot of open threes. We were not hitting them yet. Thankfully, we did end up slowly hitting them as the game progressed. And then Portis and Lopez were also hitting tough threes. So that's why we're down 15-7 early. Little jarring there, but because the Magic were then down 30-22 after one quarter. Paolo was playing well. He had 11 points already at that point. I was not liking the Joe Ingles, Cole Anthony, Markelle Fultz trio out there together against kind of a bigger Bucks lineup. at least from a backcourt perspective, like a very active Bucks backcourt. And then Markel in general, like he was letting Damian Lillard get around him so easily. And even though Lillard had a bad shooting game, like he had his most success with Markel on him. And then that's one of those where I thought Anthony Black would have put much more resistance on him. But I mean, look, Gary Harris, Jalen Suggs defensively did a great job on Lillard. Like you don't, no denying that. Cole, I thought he was struggling with the Bucks wing size. And then again, Fultz in general was just not playing well in this game. We were only down six though, midway through the second quarter, which then the Magic used kind of a 9-0 run to tie the game at 39-39 with Isaac basically guarding everyone. It's tough to say differently. Like he put on a defensive clinic. He was even getting a ton of national media praise. Magic took the lead late in the half as Wendell got his first minutes late in that second quarter as he gave kind of Isaac a quick breather. We then saw them both together on the floor briefly together, which something we may see more of in the Cavs series, considering, you know, they've got Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, but we'll see. And then Franz had double digits scoring in that quarter after going scoreless in the first quarter. You know, Franz would finish with 25 points in the game. He would finish, I think, 19 points total of averaging 20 points per game this season. So that's okay. Still, despite the bad three-point shooting, like still a great Franz season. And the Magic led 47-42 at halftime. Like it was 19-3. It was a 19-3 Orlando run. It was all solely built off of defense. And I don't know, how you feeling at halftime at this point, Penny? I mean, that's pretty good considering how we started the game.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, look, defense is not usually pretty, but the defensive effort was so aesthetically pleasing in addition to being physically impressive that that run in the second quarter that, you know, I kind of ended up carrying into the second half as well was just no way around it. It was built on defense and also it was still beautiful to watch.
Yeah, look, the only big worry was Suggs having three fouls going into the third quarter. You know, Paolo, again, he strong game. He had 17 points at halftime, did Paolo. And then in the third, you know, after Gary hit a three, you had this awesome play where both Gary Harris and then Jalen Suggs get on the floor to basically rip the ball from Patrick Beverley and throw it up to Paolo, who then on his own in transition kind of Eurostep dunked all over Damian Lillard to put us up 54-46. That felt like a huge, just energizing play. And I thought if we were going to win the game, we could literally point to that play as what really led us to victory. And I mean, we didn't look back from here. We didn't lose the lead from here. And then, you know, you had bench man Wendell Carter Jr. Checks in, immediately cleans up a missed shot attempt by us with a putback slam, essentially, when, you know, literally as soon as he checked in, he did that. And then Franz picks Bobby Portis's pocket for a fast break slam. The Magic, they've got momentum at this point. We're up 66-59. Had the Magic then not started, I mean, fouling three-point shooters, we probably would have been up 20. But we led 80-71 entering the fourth quarter. Paolo at that point was up to 26-10-7. He didn't have to do much after that, honestly. That was close to what his line was to finish the game. And then Franz went from that scoreless opening period to he was at 18 points going to the fourth quarter. The Magic were a league best 39-1 when leading going into the fourth quarter. And you can make that 40-1 now because obviously we closed this game out. You know, Cole turned it on in the fourth. We had a Franz steal and a fast break hammer, followed then by just an immediate Cole steal and left-handed hammer slam that put the Magic up 91-71 with 8 minutes left. Just early dagger plays. Kia Center's going nuts. I mean, what are you thinking about these energizer plays, Benny?
I mean, it was crazy. It was one sequence after the next, and it just felt like, you know, hammer, 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 exactly right. You're waiting for Doc to pull the plug, and you know, capped by at that time, the Cole slam was pretty incredible.
By that point, the Hornets had upset the Cavs, which meant the Bucks were guaranteed the 2 or 3 seed, which meant the Bucks were going to avoid the Magic in the first round, and they get to avoid Boston's side of the bracket as well. So it was locked in that at that point that it would be Cavs magic, a 4-5 series, if Orlando held on to the win. And because Cleveland, look, man, Cleveland tanked today to get the Magic in the first round. And I want you 100% can use that as motivation in this Cavs series now. The fact that the Cavs tanked to try and get you, like, you can definitely utilize that as fuel. Yeah, Penny, are you surprised Cleveland tanked to get us? Like, because look, I think the whole thing was to tank to avoid basically playing either the seventh seed Sixers or it'd be seventh seed Heat, depending on what happens in the play-in. But in doing so, they had they won, I think they would have ended up third, I think, if I'm right. So they ended up kind of screwing themselves potentially here from a seeding perspective, because now they're on Boston's side of the bracket. So even if they beat us, you're then most likely playing Boston in the second round. It's a little weird, right?
I don't begrudge any team for trying to line up to play the Magic in the first round, but it does seem short-sighted for anyone that has, you know, Eastern Conference final or championship aspirations, which is every playoff team, basically, to then put yourself up against Boston, the best team in the league, in the conference semifinals. So, I mean, I guess technically that's kind of what you get for trying to game the system that way. I don't know.
So yeah, back to our game. The Magic then led 98-73 on a Joel Ingles kapaya, where the triple that had Doc Rivers throw in the towel, and then the benches got emptied, and yeah, that was the ball game. We won, but you know, this is our seventh division title in franchise history. We, man, look, as the fifth seed, this is the highest playoff seeding the Orlando Magic will be since we were the fourth seed in 2011 when the Hawks upset us. But yeah, you can't say that division titles don't matter, because they played a factor here in these standings. Because yeah, I mean, we had the three-way tie with Pacers and Philly at 47-35, but because we are the Southeast Division champions, we're the fifth seed. So how about that, Penny?
Pretty great year. And you know, we'll encapsulate all of that also. But the cool thing about this game in particular, firstly going into it, obviously you could tell, you know, the energy in the building and all of that anticipatory energy in the crowd, but you could tell how bad David and Jeff wanted this game too on the call on TV, which is always, you know, Dante and everyone's, they're always a little more outwardly expressive, but David and JT wanted this one bad too. And the coolest thing, other than, you know, having basically walking away with a blowout victory in a need to win game, was I think the Jonathan Isaac story, which is that if he's available for 30 minutes a night in the playoffs, or 32 or whatever, you know, it ends up being, we saw today, this afternoon, how impactful that can be and how much that changes everything in a 7-game series, where now we're, you know, it's time to start playing chess too.
Yeah. Look, you also kind of have to physically start testing him as well. I mean, look, we're at this point, he's the best starting center we have on the team, right? If you look at him, Wendell, Mo, Goga, like it has to be Isaac, and you need him against a Cavs front court with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, where Paolo playing power forward is fine, but if you have a guy that can cover so much ground and just elevates everybody's defense, and Isaac, like, he has to start, right?
Now here, absolutely, and you know, we'll delve into that series in detail at some point, but the question I have, obviously this season for Jonathan Isaac has been a resounding success, but the way that they handled him this year with, you know, basically what you only ended up playing in two sets of back-to-backs, and one of them was for, you know, what, like a 5-minute stretch, I think. Yeah. But essentially was on a minutes restriction all season long. The fact that he made it through the year, again, all parties involved have to be incredibly happy about that. Does that now set the stage for this being the way that he's handled into the future, which is crazy because, as you saw tonight, today, this afternoon, like, presumably you could argue that he may be a top 2 or 3 player on the team and how he impacts the game defensively, where if you have him on the floor, the team's so much better. Like, it's very tantalizing to have that in your back pocket, but not be able to utilize it to the fullest. So do the Magic take this season's approach, assuming that he's on the roster moving forward, which I think you have to assume? And is this the, you know, are these the Kawhi rules essentially for J.I. into the future?
That's a good question. Honestly, it's going to depend on how the playoffs go with it all. Cause if he looks really effective and, like, let's say you're playing him 30 plus minutes and he's handling him fine. And from just a long-term health perspective, you got to just kind of preserve him in the regular season. Then, yeah, I mean, the answer is yes. You probably do that because it seems to be working right now, but I still want to test him further in the playoffs from a minutes perspective, just from just a load perspective, to see if he can actually handle it. Because now you're going to be getting into money here soon where, yeah, he's going to be on the final year of his contract next season. So, but theoretically, you could give him an extension in the offseason, because same thing with Jalen Suggs, same thing with Franz Wagner. Like, you've got extensions that you could potentially give out. And, you know, do you lock in a Jonathan Isaac now, or do you play it out another season? You know, we don't have to worry about that now, but part of me getting to that decision, or part of the front office having to get to that decision, is what's he look like now in the playoffs? What's he look like in a 7-game series now, where there's no, like, the shackles have been taken off, and, like, he's out there roaming free, playing, you know, more than he's ever played since 2019, basically. You know, it's one, yeah, of those things. I don't know. You now, have another viewpoint on that?
Well, I mean, I think if he's effective in the playoffs, then, you know, they have been ramping him up a little bit over the last, we'll say, month or so. I'm trying to remember what the game that he just went ballistic scoring the other night. But basically he went on that tear and then had to come out because he, you know, fouled to come out of the game because he was exerting himself so much. So you have to build up that endurance to play extended minutes. Like, you can't just play 15 and then play 30 and not have a drop off in terms of conditioning and effectiveness. But it seems to me that, you know, look, every team, obviously they've instituted the 65 game thing for awards and stuff like that, but every team now, especially based on last season where, you know, the play-in teams made it, in Miami's case, all the way to the finals, right? Like, you're trying to survive the regular season more than ever. So, yeah, you know, if the Magic can continue to survive regular seasons with 15 minutes a night of J.I. and then you get this monumental defensive force available to you with, you know, basically shackle free in the playoffs, it seems like something that they would have to continue to follow that same approach moving forward.
Yeah, we'll see if they keep the 65 game stipulation for awards next season. I kind of hope they do, but that's bad news for a guy like Isaac then, if you do this again where you're trying to sit him out back to backs, because then he literally won't qualify if you hold him out of every back to back, a second game of a back to back or whatever, or first game of a back to back, depending on how the schedule pays out. Because let's be honest, if he played like the minimum that was required, he would have made an all NBA. He would have made an all defensive team. He would have, like, all the national media guys say it, but because there, I mean, there's people saying, like, next season, like, defensive player of the year could be between Wembanyama and Jonathan Isaac. Like, that's how, like, that's out there now, you know? So that's another thing to think about. That's why, again, we're not going to know till after this postseason, however long it lasts, you know, but, as far as how this month played out, I mean, we went 4-4 in April. As bad as it looked there, you know, we still went 500 in the month of April. I thought we'd go 3-5, so we even did better than what I thought for the month. And we're going to go over how we did with our season predictions next episode, you know, along with how we kind of look at the Cavs series as well. But we'll look at our season predictions. There's the stat that the Magic PR folks dropped with Paolo Banchero, where at 21 years and 154 days old, Paolo Banchero became the youngest player in NBA history to lead his team in scoring, rebounds, and assists in a single season, which is ridiculous. And he's not going to get into the All-NBA third team, I'm pretty sure, at this point. maybe had the Magic finished as the second seed in the East, maybe, but you know, he's not going to be getting, you know, and not nearly enough votes for All-NBA third team, but I feel like he should be an All-NBA third team guy, especially when you got folks talking about how like the Lakers should have both LeBron and Anthony Davis in there. I disagree. You should be on a, you know, you should be on a successful team to warrant that. But yeah, I mean, thoughts with this game, that's all I got. Basically, it was a draining, it was a challenging couple games there. No doubt, but I think the roster's stronger for it now. I mean, the team's stronger for it now. I think the fan base hopefully stronger for it now, just having to deal with this, because now it's all about kind of doing checkmark, you know, checking stuff off the list now from a postseason perspective. You know, it's like, can you win two games in a playoff series? You know, we haven't won two games in a playoff series since we got bounced 4-2 by the Hawks in 2011. Can you win a first round playoff series? We haven't won a playoff series at all since 2010, since the second round of 2010. You know, we swept the Bobcats and we swept the Hawks because we were there for that game four for the sweep. You know, that's the last time we won a playoff series. We were in Atlanta for that shit. So, and this is the longest drought that we've gone without winning a playoff series. But, you know, as far as this, but just this stretch, this fan appreciation day, this Bucks game in general, like it's great. It's funny seeing Patrick Beverley walking back kind of the shit talking a little bit now and just be like, hey, congrats on making the playoffs and all that shit. I mean, Magic fans gave his pod like a lot of listens and views. So Patrick Beverley wins in the end one way or another. And
it's crazy that it's been such a long drought, because we were also in the building for the
Raptors
clincher for the Raptor Magic Raptors series, which we were also immortalized in the building for attending that game. But at the time, you know, that was basically every time the Magic lost a playoff series prior to that, it's like they're getting swept out of the playoffs and then no playoffs at all, and then finally breaking through. So it will feel very similar again. And, you know, as you mentioned, an even longer drought now when we finally break through again. And don't know if it'll happen this year, but certainly it's on the horizon. I am glad. I feel like as the game was playing out today, where it looked for a long time like it was going to be the Bucks in the four slot, I am glad that we're not playing Milwaukee in the first round. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Giannis, but do you feel the same way that we kind of dodged a bullet? Because in this game, I thought Mosley certainly treated it like a playoff game, not only with the decision to start Isaac, but with some of the defensive assignments and things like that. Like, they, you know, he showed some cards today. We'll say that if we had to play Milwaukee in a series, that Milwaukee would then have tape on to use against us starting in a game one.
Now, it's a very good point. You're right. I mean, he did, like, he, and he had to, like, he couldn't keep that in his back pocket. So it's, I would prefer going up against the Cavs, just because like they're on the verge of imploding. And yeah, could Donovan Mitchell average, assuming he's healthy? That's the thing, is Donovan Mitchell has been playing, but he doesn't look like Donovan Mitchell, but that could change with a week off. You know, Donovan Mitchell could easily average like 40 points per game in this playoff series. And, you know, we could be bemoaning this matchup. Like, you know, maybe I would have much rather have taken the Bucks, considering you don't know if Giannis Antetokounmpo, when he would have come back and played in the series. But, you know, other than that, like, because even like the Pacers, like the last time we played the Pacers, they kicked our ass because the Pacers are actually playing defense now. So I think the Cavs from a matchup perspective is great. It's going to be good. Like, I'm sure, you know, from a betting perspective, the Cavs are going to be favorites, but I think it's a coin flip series. It could really literally go either way, which is good for us. And I just want to see us learn a lot about our core. And I mean, we already know, based off the past couple of games, what our deficiencies are and what we kind of have to do in the off season, but you're going to really, really know come playoff time. And we'll worry about all that later on. But yeah, that's all I got. You got anything else before we get out of here? Any other Magic topics?
I think it's important to note, because we're going to have a different perspective in a couple weeks here, as we conclude the regular season, a resounding success. No matter
Yes.
what happens in the playoffs, a resounding success for the regular season.
Yeah, again, you go from 22 to 34 to 47 wins. Like this is a big deal. Like to have this young of a team, or at least this young of a core, get to where they are right now. Everything else from here on out is theoretically gravy. Like it really is. Like I know, maybe I don't want to get swept. It would suck if like we won game one and we got, douchebag swept. Like I don't want to see that, considering we did that both in 2019 and 2020. But everything else, everything from here through the playoffs now is gravy, and just got to enjoy it. Just got to bring that Magic fan and energy. Whether it's going to be interesting to see what the Magic do now from a watch party perspective. Like, is it going to be Wall Street? Is Church Street's empty enough where you could theoretically take over all of Church Street now? So, I would almost lean towards that than doing Wall Street if you're thinking that you're trying to attract as many Magic fans as possible, because this is exciting. And I think this is the anniversary too of the DJ Augustine game winner, where we were at Wall Street, which was
And there's
2019.
significantly more fan interest in this team this year than there was in 2019. So there's an appetite for it. We'll see what happens, but we'll see where we end up personally. But gonna be a fun ride no matter what happens, and gonna look on the bright side of all of it.
All right, so you folks are going to get another pod from us this week, but that's going to do it for this episode. If you're still listening, we thank you very much for your time. We're the longest running Magic podcast show in existence, so any added support is much appreciated. Subscribing, rating the show highly, positive comments, they all help this podcast ranking immensely. Tweet us any of your questions and feedback. Penny, what's your Twitter handle?
At Spencer Strode.
No C's, just S's, and I'm at Papa Giorgio MBO. And with that, take care. Let's go, Magic. Playoffs, baby.